Good evening, everyone. This is Lou Cavalli talking to you from the Divided Kingdom. Welcome to the program. We'll begin tonight, get right down to business with an article that appeared in LifeSite News. This appeared March the 20th. It's a couple days back. And it's entitled, France Prepares Survival Manual for Every Household in Case of War. And the subheadline reads, the 20-page guide urges citizens to prepare for terror attacks, pandemics, cyber threats, and nuclear fallout. This is by Andreas Wilser. The French government is preparing to distribute a survival manual. That's in quotes. It's not its official title. A survival manual to every household to prepare citizens for catastrophic events, including war. Quote, the survival manual aims to encourage citizens to develop their resilience in the face of different crises, said a spokesperson for Prime Minister Francois Bayrou, and he spoke to CNN. And the spokesperson added, this includes natural disasters, technological and cyber incidents, health crises like COVID-19, and security crises like terrorist attacks and armed conflict, she added. If approved by the Prime Minister, the 20-page booklet will be sent to every household in France before summer. The recommendations include having emergency contacts at hand, such as fire department, ambulance, police, knowing the relevant radio channels, and ensuring all windows and doors are shut in the case of a nuclear accident. The survival manual also recommends having emergency supplies, including 6 liters, which is about 1.6 gallons of water, a dozen cans of food, a flashlight, and batteries to prepare for power outages, as well as basic medical supplies. The booklet also appears to be an attempt by the government to get more people to join the military forces, as it outlines possibilities to help, quote, defend the community, unquote, such as joining the reserve units or local firefighters. CNN reports that Sweden and Finland have issued similar instructions to their citizens. French President Emmanuel Macron announced earlier this month that he wants, quote, a major overhaul, unquote, of France's military, including bolstering the number of operational reservists from current value of 40,000 to 100,000 by the year 2035. During an address at a military base in France earlier this week, he said additional investment in military capacities will be announced soon. Quote, our country and our continent must continue to defend themselves, equip themselves, and prepare if we want to avoid war, Macron said. He went on, this is the choice we have made and will continue to make. No one can say what will happen in the months and years to come, unquote. The Prime Minister's spokesperson echoed Macron's words, stating that, quote, the first step in citizen engagement is to be informed about threats and stay updated. Engagement can also mean joining associations such as the reserve forces, she said. We are doing everything we can to ensure citizens are ready to respond in the event of a crisis. Next, we have Trump administration. One of our listeners gave me a good idea, said I ought to say at the end of an article the source. So I'll do that right now. That article I just read came from LifeSite News, and their website is simply lifesitenews.com, and it was published on Thursday, March 20th of this year. And again, the title was France Prepares Survival Manual for Every Household in Case of War. And then we go on to another LifeSite News article. We have a couple on this general topic from different sources. This one, the title reads, Trump Administration Releases Long-Awaited Files on JFK, RFK, MLK Assassinations. The subheadline says, the Trump Administration released more than 80,000 documents today about the assassinations of former President John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King, Jr. The move is a result of an executive order Trump signed after being sworn in. This, again, is from LifeSite News by Stephen, I believe you pronounce his name, Cox, K-O-K-X, Tuesday, March 18th, 2025. Dateline, Washington, D.C. The Trump administration has released what it is calling all of the files, that's in quotes, all of the files the government has in its possession related to the assassination of former U.S. President John F. Kennedy. The documents were made available on Tuesday through the National Archives, quote, in accordance with President Donald Trump's directive of March 17, 2025. All records previously withheld for classification that are part of the President John F. Kennedy assassination records collection are released, it was announced. Trump had announced Monday, while at the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington, D.C., that the files would be released the following day. Trump was at the center of overseeing a board meeting. He has overhauled the organization during his first few weeks as president, so it will host patriotic and pro-Christian events. More than 80,000 pages were released. The move is a result of an executive order Trump signed just days after being sworn in on January 20th. The order directed Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, to prepare a plan for the file's release. And the article goes on. GOP Congressman, a Congresswoman, Anna Paulina Luna of Florida, announced in March the launch of a website that contains the new files. And it says, click here to access it. And I'll get that name of this article at the end again. Luna was tapped by the Trump administration to act as the head of a task force to oversee their rollout. She previously stated she believes there were, quote, two shooters, unquote, of President Kennedy. The contents of the files have been subject to speculation for decades following Kennedy's death in November 1963. Various theories have been floated as to whether they would reveal who was motivated enough and who had the ability to carry out the attack. Polls show most Americans do not believe the Warren Commission's claim that assassin Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. Alternative theories that have gained traction are that multiple shooters were strategically placed on top of several buildings in Dealey Plaza, and that one of the grassy knoll, and that one on the grassy knoll in front of Kennedy, to his right, fired at him too. And I'll just interject, this is something I've researched a great deal, as many of you know. And just to set this, they don't really give some of the background here. Dealey Plaza was the park-like area at the outskirts of Dallas, pretty much at the end of the motorcade, where Kennedy was going to a luncheon that day in Dallas. And the motorcade had gone almost the entire, more or less, 10-mile route when the shooting took place. And to this day, no one is quite sure just what happened. Part of that is due to the nature of the attack. Part of it is due to the fact that a great deal of government cover-up took place. And I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But getting back to the article, I should mention, too, that the grassy knoll was really not much more than a little hill where a railroad bridge went over the roadway, and the embankment caused by the building up of the railroad bridge, that little grassy area to the right of the motorcade, has always been called the grassy knoll. It's not much of a hill. It's just a little bit of a rise due to the construction work. Getting back now, the files released today also contain information about the 1968 assassination of Kennedy's brother, Robert F. Kennedy, and activist Martin Luther King, Jr. Tucker Carlson discussed the files with former CNN host Chris Cuomo earlier this month. Cuomo argued, quote, there's clearly information in those files that are going to make the CIA look bad, unquote. Just the CIA? Carlson cryptically shot back. insinuating other entities may also be implicated. And, of course, there's always been a lot of talk, right from day one, that government forces may have been behind the assassination. Not much clear evidence of that, but it's always been speculation. And morally, now, let me give you the identity of this person. Washington Post reporter Jeffrey Morley, on a podcast, explains out of his Substack page that the National Archives has more than 3,800 records related to JFK on hand, and that the FBI recently sent 2,400 additional files to the archives for future release. He also notes that there are more than 319,000 documents comprising an estimated 3 million pages of material at the Archives 2 facility in College Park, Maryland. And I've been by there. That's a huge place just down the road from the University of Maryland, College Park campus. And a little more speculation here from another article. This one, and that one, by the way, was from LifeSite News on Tuesday, March 18th. The one I just read entitled, Trump Administration Releases Long-Awaited Files on JFK, RFK, MLK Assassinations. The next one is from the BBC. So we get a little impression of what the thinking is across the pond. This is entitled, Four Key Takeaways from Release of JFK Files. This was by Jake Horton and Cheyenne. This is a challenging name to pronounce. Sideris Zeta is the best I can do. BBC News, March 20th. John F. Kennedy was the last U.S. president killed by an assassin. Enthusiasts are poring over thousands of newly released documents related to the investigation into President John F. Kennedy's assassination. As many experts expected, the latest release by the Trump administration does not answer all lingering questions about one of the U.S.'s historic turning points, the 1963 killing of Kennedy in Dallas, Texas. But the latest batch does include documents that are now mostly or fully unredacted. That is to say, they have not been crossed out all over the place to make them less than useful. They reveal further how much the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, observed JFK's killer before the shooting. A U.S. government investigation in the 1960s, and that, just interjecting, would be the Warren Commission, the famous Warren Commission, concluded that Lee Harvey Oswald, a drifter and former U.S. Marine who at one point defected to the then Soviet Union, acted alone when he shot at Kennedy's motorcade from a nearby building. Now, let me just say something here. I'm going to interject. This is Lou speaking. Not the article, but Lou. Notice the word drifter. If you really read about Lee Harvey Oswald, he was far from a drifter. Most of what he did in his life had some purpose. He didn't just drift from place to place. He carefully got himself into the Marines, tried to lie about his age. That didn't work, so he waited a year. He was given a position in a top secret, that is a base dealing with a top secret U-2 spy plane in the radar works at that Air Force base in Japan. Not exactly a drifter. When he returned, he quickly, supposedly, defected to the Soviet Union. Although, to this day, many people feel that that was part of some kind of government program, because several other young men of the similar age and background defected to the Soviet Union at exactly the same time, as if it was a planned CIA operation. And you can bet that if there were any records on that, they've long since been destroyed. I meant to bring one of my books on the JFK assassination, a book by Anthony Summers. And the title is Not in Your Lifetime, I believe. In that book, it describes the fact that the U.S. Army had a file on Lee Harvey Oswald, but conveniently before a second investigation took place in the late 1970s, the entire file was destroyed. And they said that, well, that was just a routine destruction of things they didn't want anymore. Does anybody really think the accused killer of a president was a routine matter? I hardly think so. So my first objection to this is that, like so many of these mainstream media outlets, they have swallowed the idea that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone attacker, hook, line, and sinker. But now, getting back to that, they say the case still prompts questions, along with wild conspiracy theories more than 60 years later. And the latest release is unlikely to change that. Here are some key takeaways. One, more on Oswald, but no bombshells. The documents further shed light on the CIA's strong surveillance of Oswald, said Jefferson Morley, a former Washington Post reporter and editor of the JFK Facts blog. Quote, he's a subject of deep interest to the CIA, unquote, long before the assassination. And the extent of this has only become clear in the last few years, Mr. Morley said. Well, this is Lou again. I'm not quite sure that's accurate, but we'll let that go by for now. Getting back, many of the new documents have been released before, but now more complete versions are available. Although specialists are still coming through, no earth-shattering stories have surfaced. Still, Mr. Morley calls it, quote, the most exciting news around JFK records since the 1990s. Several very important documents have come into public view, he said. And it goes on to describe some of the facts that transparency is good. Says Philip Shannon, who wrote a 2013 book about the assassination, told the Associated Press the previously released documents described a trip Oswald took to Mexico City in September 1963, months before the assassination. Not very many months, 2 months, that's all. So it was shortly before the assassination. It says the CIA was monitoring him at that time, according to the Associated Press. Quote, there's reason to believe he talked openly about killing Kennedy in Mexico City, and that people overheard him say that, unquote. Okay, this is Lou again. Let me put my 2 cents worth in. I have never read anything whatsoever in all the descriptions I've read that said that any evidence showed that Oswald talked about killing Kennedy ahead of time. No one has made that claim that I know of, much less the CIA. And it's interesting that although the CIA was supposedly meticulously keeping tabs on both the Cuban embassy and the Russian embassy in Mexico City at the time, the only photographs they took show a man who obviously is not Oswald, who is a stocky, heavyset guy. Oswald was a little skinny guy. So to say that you can put too much stock in any of this business about Mexico City is very questionable. Did Oswald even go there? Because there were sightings of a man that people said was Oswald in Dallas when he was supposed to have been in Mexico City. So just put that little caveat in there. And getting back to the article, in a previously released April 1975 memo, the CIA downplayed what it knew about Oswald's trip to Mexico City, the AP reported. The CIA recorded 3 phone calls between Oswald and a guard at the Soviet embassy, it said, but Oswald only identified himself in 1. We could go on and on, and I won't bore you with endless little details, but that also is rather questionable. Point number 2, intelligent methods revealed. A number of the documents shed light on Kennedy's relationship with the CIA before his death and on intelligence gathering techniques, giving a window into Cold War operations. A new unredacted memo reveals a more complete version of a note written by Kennedy aide Arthur Schlesinger Jr., critical of the CIA and its role in shaping foreign policy, the note shows the agency's huge presence in U.S. embassies, even in allied countries such as France. In the note, Schlesinger warns Kennedy about the agency's influence in American foreign policy. Though not directly related to the assassination, the memo details the rocky relationship between the president and intelligence agencies. The CIA is traditionally opposed to releasing operational or budget information, said David Barrett, a Villanova University professor and expert on the CIA and presidential power. And he said, quote, it's a very good thing for the government to release these documents, even if there still may be some redactions. One document details the use of a fluoroscopic scanner, that is, using X-rays to show images of the inside of an object. This was developed to detect hidden microphones, possibly used to bug CIA offices. In another document, the CIA describes a system to secretly tag and identify public phone boxes that are tapped using a paint only visible under ultraviolet light. And I'll skip a few things here that are of less interest. Point number three they bring out is old theories resurrected. Some well-known online accounts claim that the recent documents reveal new details about long-alleged plots against Kennedy, even though some of the supposed revelations have been public for years. These include several viral posts about Gary Underhill, a World War II military intelligence agent. Mr. Underhill reportedly claimed that a cabal of CIA agents was behind the assassination, a theory openly published in Ramparts, a left-wing magazine in 1967. Mr. Underhill's death in 1964 was ruled a suicide, but the magazine cast doubt on that as well. Well, they don't go into very much what these revelations involved. So we'll move on to point four. Are the files completely unredacted? And remember, redacted simply means they've crossed out, so you can't read what they don't want you to see. The 1992 law required all of the documents related to the assassination to be released within 25 years. But that law also included national security exceptions. The push for greater transparency has led to more releases over time. Both President Trump in his first term and President Biden, as recently as 2023, released batches of documents. Ahead of the new release, President Trump said that his staff, that he had asked his staff, quote, not to redact anything, unquote, from the documents. That doesn't appear to be entirely the case. The new documents still have some redactions. However, experts were largely in agreement that the latest release was a step forward for transparency, and so on and so forth. And the Villanova historian, Mr. Barrett, said, whenever there's an assassination, there will be debates, and to some degree, there will be conspiracy theories, said Barrett, the Villanova historian. That's not going to change because of these or any other documents. Again, a word of caution. This is Lou speaking now. Whenever they say the word conspiracy theories, it's always trying to denigrate, to undercut whatever they don't like. That's a common way to try and accuse anyone who has a different viewpoint of just being a nut. And if you read as much as I have, you will quickly realize that most of these so-called conspiracy theories, except the very far-out ones, of course, and there are some of those, are based largely on facts that the government itself found out. Most of the controversies about the John F. Kennedy assassination, and to a lesser extent, the other two, the Robert F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. assassinations, most of those theories are based upon the actual research done by the U.S. government. But in the case of Kennedy's death, the president's death, much of that was buried in 26 volumes published after the main Warren Report had been published, several months later. So the Warren Report, the one-volume report, came out that summarized all the findings. But when you dig into the 26 volumes, and not that many of those were published, perhaps because they were expensive, but many good college libraries have those, and you can get them online now. So even if you can't get the paper copies, you can at least see the documents online. Just type in Warren Commission hearings. And it will give you, I think there are, to the best of my memory, there are something like I don't know if it's 10 or 15 volumes of hearings, and then the remaining volumes of the 26 are exhibits of various kinds, photographs, drawings, maps, and so forth. So if you delve into the 26 volumes, as many researchers have done, you find very, very different scenarios from what the Warren Commission in one volume report published. Sometime, perhaps in the future, maybe in November, around the anniversary of Kennedy's death, I'll go into this in more detail. But now, let's switch topics for a while. Here we hear from Fox News. Oh, by the way, that I just read was from the BBC, entitled Four Key Takeaways from Release of JFK Files, and this was dated March the 20th. So now we move on to the Fox News, a whole different topic. EPA terminates Biden administration's green grants worth $20 billion, and that's with a B, $20 billion, Zeldin says. And he has a little quote, the EPA will once again be an exceptional steward of your tax dollars, EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin said. And this is by Landon Mion, M-I-O-N, for Fox News, March 12th, 2025. The Environmental Protection Agency is terminating $20 billion in grants awarded by the Biden administration for climate and clean energy projects, Administrator Lee Zeldin announced Tuesday. In a video posted to X, Zeldin said $20 billion in U.S. tax dollars were, quote, parked at an outside financial institution in a deliberate effort to limit government oversight. Doling out your money to just eight pass-through, politically connected, unqualified, and in some cases, brand new NGOs, unquote. And of course, NGOs are non-governmental organizations. The money has since been frozen, he said, noting that the Department of Justice and the FBI are investigating. The program, approved by Congress under the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act, was formerly known as the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, but is more commonly referred to as the Green Bank. Two initiatives worth $14 billion and $6 billion, respectively, aim to offer grants to nonprofits, community development banks, and other groups for projects focusing on disadvantaged communities. The EPA, quote, just notified eight recipients of $20 billion in Biden EPA gold bars that their grants have been terminated, Zeldin wrote on X. In his video, Zeldin cited reports that Power Forward Communities, that's its title, Power Forward Communities, a group linked to Democrat Stacey Abrams, received $2 billion after reporting just $100 in total revenue the year before. He also said the founding director of the EPA's program allocated $5 billion to his former employer after working on the legislation that created the program from his role in the White House. Zeldin said, quote, these two examples have only been the tip of the iceberg. I'm here to report back to the American people that as of today, I have officially terminated these grant agreements entirely. Not only does the EPA have full authority to take this action, but frankly, we were left with no other option. He continued, this termination is based on substantial concerns regarding program integrity, objections to the award process, programmatic fraud, waste and abuse, and misalignment with the agency's priorities, which collectively undermine the fundamental goals and statutory objectives of the awards, he continued. Zeldin said the, quote, only way, unquote, to reduce waste, increase oversight, and meet the intent of the law, as it was written, is by terminating the grants. He said, it is his unwavering commitment, those are his exact words, unwavering commitment to President Donald Trump, Congress, and to the American people. Zeldin concluded, the EPA will once again be an exceptional steward of your tax dollars. I will have it no other way. Once again, that's from Fox News. Dated March 12, 2025, the headline read, EPA terminates Biden administration's green grants worth $20 billion, Zeldin says. And now, a little topic having to do with the vaccines that never dies out. From Natural News, Iowa takes on Big Pharma. Bill challenges vaccine makers' liability shield. And this was dated March 22nd, 2025, just a few days ago. And the author was Willow, and I believe it's T-O-H-I, Tohi, I guess it's pronounced. And we have some bullet points that kind of summarize it. A subcommittee in the Iowa House of Representatives advanced House File 712, which would prohibit the sale and administration of vaccines in the state, unless manufacturers waive certain liability protections granted under federal law. The bill specifically targets design defect claims, aiming to hold manufacturers accountable for injuries caused by inherently dangerous vaccine designs. Next bullet point. The bill addresses concerns about the VICP, established under the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which has compensated only 11,671 out of 24,602 claims over three decades, so less than half. Critics argue the system inadequately serves the public and prioritizes corporate interests over accountability. The 2011 Supreme Court ruling in, and I apologize ahead of time if I mispronounce this name, Brucewitz versus Wyeth, reinforced vaccine manufacturers' immunity from design defect lawsuits, sparking criticism. Justice Sotomayor's dissent highlighted the lack of incentives for manufacturers to improve vaccine designs, a concern echoed by advocates like Kim Mack Rosenberg of Children's Health Defense. The bill reflects growing public skepticism toward vaccine mandates and liability protections, fueled by increased access to information and the COVID-19 pandemic. A 2022 Iowa poll showed only 34% support for mandatory school vaccinations, signaling a demand for greater accountability in the pharmaceutical industry. Another bullet point, while supporters argue the bill would restore accountability and improve public trust, opponents want it could lead to higher costs, reduce vaccine access, and unfounded injury claims. The bill has ignited a broader conversation about balancing corporate responsibility, public health, and individual rights with potential implications for national vaccine policy. The next subtopic is entitled The Push for Accountability. The bill targets a key issue, the liability shield that vaccine manufacturers have enjoyed since the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, and in parentheses, NCVIA. This federal law established the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, the VICP, a, quote, no-fault, unquote, system designed to compensate individuals injured by vaccines while protecting manufacturers from costly lawsuits. However, critics argue that the system has failed to adequately serve the public. And as we said before, with only 11,671 out of 24,602 adjudicated claims resulting in compensation over the past three decades. Representative Thompson, a Republican from Charles City, explained, and that would be Charles City, Iowa, explained his motivation for introducing the bill. Quote, we don't allow it for toaster ovens, for paint, for any one of 10 million different items that people buy in the United States. And we shouldn't allow it for vaccines. If anything, we should maybe be a little more strict with things that are very complicated and are being put into people's bodies and represented as safe and not poisonous, unquote. The bill specifically addresses design defect claims, which occur when a vaccine's inherent design, rather than a flaw in its manufacturing or administration, makes it dangerous. Under current law, vaccine manufacturers are immune from such claims due to a 2011 Supreme Court decision, Grauswitz versus Wyeth, which reinterpreted the NCBIA to grant blanket liability protection to pharmaceutical companies. A broken system? The Grauswitz case has been a flashpoint for critics of the vaccine injury compensation system. The lawsuit was brought by the parents of Hannah Grauswitz, who suffered seizures and developmental issues after receiving the DPT vaccine in 1992. After being denied compensation by the VICP, the family sued Wyeth, now Pfizer, in state court, only to have the Supreme Court rule in favor of the manufacturer. In a scathing dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor, joined by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, accused the majority of misrepresenting the NCBIA and prioritizing corporate interests over public health. Sotomayor wrote, quote, manufacturers, given the lack of robust competition in the vaccine market, will often have little or no incentive to improve the designs of vaccines that are already generating significant profit margins, unquote. And it goes on to mention that this reflects a growing concern that people are questioning vaccines after all the information that we now know about COVID, about vaccine injuries, heart damage, and so forth. And that brings up a point. And once again, the article I just read was from Natural News, March 22nd of this year, entitled Iowa Takes on Big Pharma. Now, Elizabeth, sad to say, is gone to her eternal reward. And of course, I miss her every day. And I miss her for these programs, because she was really the heart of this program. But I'm trying my best to keep up the good work that she began. If you'd like to get a copy of our book, we still have some left, COVID and Coming Chaos. It gives a good description of the entire COVID period. And now we are just about at the five-year mark from when COVID first became widely known and all the implications were felt in schools and lockdowns and so on and so forth. 5 years. It's hard to believe it's been 5 years. But that book of ours, written jointly with Elizabeth and myself, gives a good description of all that went on and all the conniving that went on when it came to the vaccine in particular. And if you'd like a copy of that book, COVID and Coming Chaos, it's still relevant to this day. As you can see, articles are still coming out about the whole matter. Just write to me, Lou Carvelis, and you spell that C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. I'll give that again in just a minute. So you don't have to pay for it. If you can give us a little extra money to cover the postage, $5 is usually enough. If you need a couple, we still have some left. If you could use a couple and give one to a concerned friend, that would be fine. Just let us know. Just write to me, say, please send me a copy or two copies or whatever of your book. And write again to me, to Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And if you can make a donation to keep this program on the air, that would be much appreciated. We've already had some very good donations this month, and we thank all of you for your concern and your help. And also, while I think of it, you can find information at our website. We have to update it. It kind of got a little behind the times when Elizabeth was ill and with her passing. But I'm going to bring it up to date as soon as possible. And our website is DividedKingdomRadio.com. DividedKingdomRadio.com. And there's a good tribute to Elizabeth there that I authored. And our webmistress, Angel, was kind enough to put on the website. So you can also see that tribute to Elizabeth if you go to DividedKingdomRadio.com. Now, we'll switch gears a little bit, something that's having to do with religion. This appeared on the website NowTheEndBegins.com. NowTheEndBegins.com. And I'm pretty sure the date was March 3rd. The date at the top is not fully visible, but it sure looks like it's March 3rd. It looks like 3/3/25. And the title, Cardinal Dolan delivers a Ramadan message, shaming all Catholics into praying for, quote, our Muslim brothers and sisters, unquote, continuing the work Pope Francis has done with his Islam alliance. As Pope Francis lays in his hospital bed, and quite possibly his deathbed, and I'll interject, I believe I just got word over the news that he had come home, that he's well enough to come home, so things are not quite as dire as they sound here. So as Pope Francis lays in his hospital bed and quite possibly his deathbed, as his condition continues to worsen, Cardinal Timothy Dolan took to the podcast, or his podcast, to deliver a stunning message on the Muslim holiday of Ramadan that starts today. In that message, Dolan refers to them, that is to the Muslims, as our Muslim brothers and sisters, sparking quite the controversy online. Calling Muslims as brothers and sisters implies there is a bond connecting the two religions, but are very far apart. Yes, not as far apart as you might think when you consider the alliance forged by Pope Francis over the past 12 years between Islam and the Roman Catholic Church. Has Ash Wednesday become the Catholic Ramadan, as Cardinal Dolan suggests? It sure has. And a whole lot more than that. And that's the memo. And that gives a quote from the Bible, from Amos 3:3. Can two walk together, except they be agreed? Cardinal Dolan said he was giving this message to shame Catholics. That's a quote, to shame Catholics, into becoming more like Muslims. And concluded his fiery missive by saying, quote, let's unite with our Muslim brothers and sisters in prayer and fasting, unquote. Cardinal Dolan even went so far as to call the Roman observance of Ash Wednesday the Catholic Ramadan. Wow, there's a lot to unpack there. So let's do a quick review of the foundation for all this laid by Pope Francis. Please take a moment to click on these links to refresh your memory about the alliance Pope Francis created between Islam and the Roman Catholic Church. And here we have four bullet points. And I believe if you go to this original article that I'm reading, you could click on these. That's what's meant when it says click on them. And it will take you to more in-depth articles on these four topics. The first one, Pope Francis signs Declaration, and this is the title, Declaration of Human Fraternity for World Peace. Covenant with Muslim Imam creating the one world religion of Chrislam. C-H-R-I-S-L-A-M. Point two, Vatican officially releases Chrislam logo for Pope Francis' upcoming Servant of Hope tour to the Muslim nation of Morocco. Point three, a common word in 2019 as Chrislam continues to grow at lightning speed. Let's check in with the major end times players and see what's new. And point four, so article four, announcement of the Chrislam Abraham Accord between Israel and UAE, that's the United Arab Emirates, was missing link needed to launch Vatican Abrahamic Faith Initiative. So, and here the author resumes, so as you can see, the shocking message delivered by Cardinal Dolan is absolutely on target with the official stance the Roman Catholic Pope has taken on Mohammed's religion of Allah. Even if Pope Francis does not survive his current health crisis, the work he has put in place with Islam and the Muslims will live on into the arrival of Antichrist in the time of Jacob's trouble. Once again, that was from the website NowTheEndBegins.com, and I believe the date was March the 3rd of this year. Next, a little travel and history all wrapped up into one. I have never been to Egypt, never seen the pyramids close up. Perhaps some of you have. Here's something from Natural News. And this apparently is a growing story, because I saw it was referred to by several other news media. This was Natural News, March 21st, 2025, by Lance D. Johnson. The headline reads, Beneath the Sands of Giza, Groundbreaking Discovery Finds Ancient Underground City Linked to the Legendary Amenti, A-M-E-N-T-I. Well, I had to look that up on the internet and find out what is Amenti. That's what I never heard of before. Apparently, it's a term for the sort of like the Greek Hades. The, what's the word? The realm beneath the earth, the realm of the dead, sort of. Amenti. And here we again have some bullet points. A vast underground city beneath the Giza Plateau has been discovered using cutting-edge satellite radar, radar technology. The city, linked to the legendary Amenti, is described in ancient texts as a repository of universal knowledge and spiritual transformation. The discovery was made possible through Doppler tomography, a groundbreaking technique developed by Professor Filippo Biondi. The findings could redefine our understanding of ancient Egypt's sacred topography and its advanced technological capabilities. A multidisciplinary team of experts, including Egyptologists, radar specialists, and forensic analysts, collaborated on the project. Now to the main article. Underground city discovered 2 kilometers deep. In a stunning revelation that could rewrite the history books, researchers have uncovered a sprawling underground city beneath the Giza Plateau, believed to be the legendary Amenti, a place long shrouded in myth and mystery. This discovery, announced by the CAFRA project, C-A-F-R-A, was made possible through advanced satellite radar imaging and a revolutionary technique known as Doppler tomography. The findings, which include intricate networks of tunnels, chambers, and corridors, suggest that the ancient Egyptians possessed knowledge and technology far beyond what modern historians have previously acknowledged. The project found structures of civilization up to 2 kilometers deep inside the earth. And here we have a subheading, the technology behind this, the discovery. The use of synthetic aperture radar, SAR technology, combined with Doppler tomography, has allowed researchers to create detailed three-dimensional reconstructions of the underground structures. This non-invasive approach, developed by Professor Filippo Biondi, has revealed a labyrinthine network extending several kilometers beneath the surface. Quote, thanks to ultra-high azimuth resolution radar imaging achieved through specialized spotlight acquisitions with long Doppler integration, we have been able to extract precise acoustic information, the spokesperson explained. This technological leap has enabled archaeologists to map the subterranean city without the need for invasive excavations, preserving the integrity of the site while uncovering its secrets. The discovery also highlights the potential for space technology to revolutionize archaeology, offering new ways to explore ancient sites that were previously inaccessible. And skipping down a little bit, this discovery marks a groundbreaking step in our understanding of ancient Egypt and its deep infrastructural relationship with the subterranean world, the spokesperson noted. It could lead to unprecedented revelations about the civilization that built the entire architectural complex, including the pyramids, which now appear to be just the tip of the iceberg of a colossal and hidden project. And then it goes on to speak of the implications for Egyptology. And it goes on, reading down now, skipping down a little bit, the discovery also raises questions about the origins of human civilization. Could the ancient Egyptians have inherited knowledge from an even older, more advanced society? The existence of the underground city, with its intricate design and alignment with ancient myths, hints at a deeper, more profound history waiting to be uncovered. The CAFRA project plans to continue its research throughout 2025, with updates shared through official documentation and scientific publication. As researchers delve deeper into the secrets of the underground city, one thing is clear: this discovery is just the beginning. The sands of Giza, long thought to have yielded all their secrets, continue to reveal astonishing truths about humanity's past. Well, interesting. Something we can keep our eyes on. And a lot of these things, of course, many authors, like Steve Quayle, have postulated that there wasn't a civilization on the earth that God destroyed before the time of Adam. And some people don't believe that. Some do. So, interesting. Then we have some LifeSite news. Hypocrisy. Thousands of trees cut down in Amazon to build road for UN climate conference. Oh, and I didn't do what I said I was going to do. That one about Egypt was in Natural News, the one I just read, March 21st, beneath the sands of Giza, etc. The next one is about cutting down a lot of trees. Hypocrisy. Thousands of trees cut down in Amazon to build road for UN climate conference. This is by Matt Lamb, Wednesday, March 19th, 2025, from LifeSite News. And the subheadline reads, Brazil is facing accusations of hypocrisy for cutting down thousands of trees and destroying wildlife habitats in order to make a road for the globalist United Nations Climate Change Conference. Thousands of trees have been cut down to make way for a highway through the Amazon rainforest in Brazil, making travel easier for attendees of an upcoming UN Climate Change Conference in November. The Globalist Conference of the Parties, I guess that's its title, Conference of the Parties, is a United Nations initiative that regularly features speakers advocating for an end to fossil fuels and other restrictions on the economic liberties of humans. However, Brazil is going out of its way to ensure car travel remains easy for conference attendees. The Telegraph, that would be the publication, The Telegraph reported, large swaths of Amazon rainforests have been cut down to make way for a road that will bring tens of thousands of delegates to this year's UN Climate Conference, COP30, in Brazil. The construction of the highway has prompted accusations of hypocrisy for a global summit that is meant to be saving the environment, cutting emissions, and preserving biodiversity. The Amazon rainforest is credited with absorbing enormous amounts of carbon and hosting extraordinary biodiversity. Locals have said the new road is destroying their livelihoods, while conservationists claim it would prove a danger to wildlife trying to move through the forest. The news outlet also reported that, quote, 800 species of plants and fungi, unquote, live in the protected area that includes part of the highway. The news outlet profiled one person who sold acai, or acai berries, and told road builders to tear down the trees. State officials say the road will accommodate animals and justify the development. A local official also denies the road is linked to the upcoming climate summit, according to Reuters. Still, many pointed out the apparent hypocrisy in an environmental conference cutting down, quote, tens of thousands of acres of rainforest, unquote. And Dr. Joel Carboni, who runs GPM, a sustainable project management company, criticized the near silence from COP30 organizers and the Brazilian government. Instead of addressing the destruction, they're slapping the word sustainable on projects that include bike lanes and solar-powered lights. Textbook greenwashing at its finest, he wrote in an essay for his company website. And he went on, let's call this what it is, a stark contradiction between words and actions. Carboni added. And he went on, climate summits like COP30 are supposed to be a rallying point for solutions, not a backdrop for hypocrisy. If we can't even ensure that the event itself upholds environmental integrity, how can we expect real progress? And energy advocacy group Power the Future also criticized the hypocrisy, pointing out this project has been delayed for a decade, but suddenly was approved. Well, this goes to show that the globalists want what they want. And it doesn't matter what they preach. They want to practice what they want to practice. And we have just enough time for a little bit of this article. That one I just read was from LifeSite News, March 19th, entitled Hypocrisy, Thousands of Trees Cut Down, etc. This one, also from LifeSite News, Kansas Black Mass, Satanist post-sacrilegious video, desecrating Bible, crucifix, communion host. This is by Emily Manchuracina, Wednesday, March 19th, 2025. Dateline, Topeka, Kansas. The Satanist spearheading plans to offer a black mass at the Kansas State Capitol posted a video of a horrific sacrilege on Monday in which he urinated on a Bible, crucifix, communion host, it's unknown whether it was consecrated, and candle with the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And Michael Stewart was the leader of this satanic grotto, it's called. Well, we're running out of time. If you want to check that out in more detail, you can go to LifeSite News. Look up the article, Wednesday, March 19th, Kansas Black Mass Satanist post sacrilegious video, etc. Well, thank you for listening to The Divided Kingdom. Again, our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. And if you want to write to me to get our book or make a donation or just to say hello, it's Lou Cavalli, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thank you for listening, and good night.